This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Look, I've been a proponent of therapy for years because it helps me prioritize what matters most in my life, but also because it gives me the tools I need to cut out the toxic people or situations that leave me completely drained. And believe me, after a Wisconsin winter, I'm feeling less social and mentally healthy than any other part of the year. So if you're looking for a little professional guidance to help give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't completely drain your battery, give BetterHelp a try. It's simple. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and the best part is it's suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/invisiblechoir today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/invisiblechoir. This episode is also sponsored by Wildgrain. What if I told you there was a way to get oven-fresh bread or artisanal pastries all baked from frozen in 25 minutes or less, all with no thawing? Well, you can with Wildgrain. Wildgrain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. My favorite are the chocolate chunk cookies. We absolutely love them in my household. So if you want to give them a try for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/choir to start your subscription. You heard me, free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/choir. That's wildgrain.com/choir. Or you can use promo code choir at checkout. The views expressed in the following episode are those of the subjects interviewed or individual presenters from the case. They do not necessarily reflect the views of Reach Freaks LLC or the Invisible Choir podcast.
Reach Freaks. Invisible Choir explores detailed depictions of violence and murder and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
He's a freaking monster.
You're heartless, soulless. You're a demon. And God will make you pay.
On the morning of Wednesday, June 7th, 2023, 17-year-old Valerie Tindall was running a load of laundry at her parents' house in Arlington, Indiana. Her mother, Sheena, had already left for her job at the local Honda dealership, while Valerie's father, Jack, a construction worker by trade, was home finishing up some remodeling in the bathroom. Before lunch, Jack decided to take a break and made his way downstairs to see what his daughter Valerie was up to. She was in her bedroom at the time, waiting for her clothes to finish drying. Her father, Jack, remembers opening her door, at which point Valerie asked him if it was all right if she went into work that day. Valerie didn't normally work on Wednesdays, but any chance to earn some extra cash as a 17-year-old was always appreciated. Valerie worked at a part-time job for a neighbor of theirs, a man who lived directly behind the family, 59-year-old Patrick Scott. Scott owned a local landscaping business at the time and was considered a close family friend. However, Valerie's parents, Jack and Sheena, have since chosen to refer to him simply as a former acquaintance or associate.
I mean, he was a good associate, I would put it that way.
Boss and acquaintance.
Yeah.
Not her boss, but...
more neighbor than anything, you know, he done neighborly things for us, and I never thought nothing of him, you know, nothing ill of him. I mean, we've had... her friends work with him. She worked with him for 2 years, and our oldest daughter worked with him. Like, there was no reason not to trust him. You got to keep in mind that he is literally the same age as her grandpa. So that's how I looked at it. Like, he was just a grandfather figure.
For the most part, Valerie's job consisted of mowing lawns of the various accounts Patrick Scott had acquired, most of which were apartment complexes and condominiums around Rush County, as well as Shelby County.
They would go to the job sites, which was an apartment complex, and they cut grass for the apartment. Occasionally, they put down mulch, stuff like that. And they work until, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe, and then come home.
Yeah. Sometimes you get a bigger job, like a tree job or moving gravel.
That morning, Valerie told her father that her boss had asked her if she could come in for a noon shift. She was supposed to be working at the South High Garden Condos in Shelbyville that day, about an 18-mile drive west of her home. Naturally, her father, Jack, saw no issue and agreed to let Valerie go.
She was happy, you know, smiling. Didn't seem like anything was the matter. And I told her, yeah, you know, if you want to, go ahead.
Valerie usually drove with her boss and neighbor in the company truck to work. But Patrick Scott was already at the job site. Valerie had also just recently purchased a green 2000 Honda Accord from her boss. And like any teenager her age, she was excited to drive her own car literally anywhere. Not long after finishing up her laundry, Valerie gathered up her things, flashed her dad a smile, and was out the door at just before 11:30 a.m.
You took off in the car, and that was it.
After Valerie was seen pulling out of the driveway, by all accounts, the day went on as normal for Bashina and Jack Tindall. That is, until later on that evening. As the summer sun began to set over Arlington, Indiana, the evening of June 7th, 17-year-old Valerie Tindall still hadn't returned home from work. When her mother walked through the door after getting off her shift at the car dealership, Sheena had sent several text messages to her daughter, all of which went undelivered. Calls to Valerie's cell phone also went directly to voicemail as well. It was at this point her parents began to worry. Valerie's mother immediately picked up the phone to call her daughter's boss, their neighbor, 59-year-old Patrick Scott. But to Sheena's confusion, Patrick Scott said that Valerie wasn't scheduled to work for him that day, and that he hadn't seen her since the day before on Tuesday, June 6th. Valerie was an independent teenager, but despite that fact, it was very uncharacteristic of her not to call or at least check in if she wasn't planning on coming home for the night.
I mean, Valerie has never, ever left this house and not come back home or not told us where she was or not answered the phone. She's never done any of that.
Valerie's mother, Sheena, tried not to let her imagination wander and to get the better of her. She tried to telling herself that Valerie was fine and was just more than likely at a friend's house and that her phone had died.
And I went into trying to convince myself that she stayed with a girlfriend. And maybe her phone was dead, she couldn't charge it, or she didn't have service. I don't know, just trying to convince myself that she would be okay when we'd see her in the morning.
Sheena and Jack Tindall both went to bed that night, hoping that tomorrow would be a better day. However, the nightmare for the Tindall family was only just beginning. Thursday, June 8th, 2023. Valerie's parents, Sheena and Jack, woke up inside of their Arlington home only to realize their daughter, Valerie, still hadn't returned. They tried to contact her again, but to no avail. It was at this moment their worry turned to desperation. Sheena and Jack immediately got into their car and drove to a nearby town where one of Valerie's friends lived, hoping they might find her there.
But then when morning came and she wasn't here, we got in the car and drove down to Carthage. We were hoping to find her car, and when we didn't, we instantly called the police as soon as we started heading back toward the house.
With still no sign of Valerie, Sheena decided it was time to notify the sheriff's office and file a missing persons report.
Dialed the sheriff's office and told them that we wanted to report her missing, and he was out here within, 30 minutes later.
After sheriff's deputies came and left the home that same day, Valerie's mother and other family members decided to head back out again to look for Valerie. Only this time they had missing persons flyers in hand, and they began plastering them all around town.
I drove one vehicle, and one of my sisters drove the other, and we loaded up the vehicles with people and posters to tape when we covered Rushville and Shelbyville because we knew she went to Shelbyville with the boss. And from there, you know, we just covered those two towns first night.
As the sun began to set for the second night in a row without any word from the missing teen, Sheena was forced to return home destitute and without her daughter in the passenger seat. Then, just moments after pulling into the driveway, Sheena witnessed a familiar face walking toward her. It was her neighbor and Valerie's boss, Patrick Scott, alongside his wife.
As soon as we got out of the car, here come Pat and his wife. And he walked up to Jack. They kind of walk off together talking, and she walks off with me, and she's, oh, I'm sure she's fine. I'm sure she just ran away. She'll come back.
After word had already spread throughout the small community of Arlington, Indiana, about Valerie's disappearance, Patrick Scott and his wife decided to pay Jack and Sheena a visit that evening on June 8th, more than 24 hours since Valerie had last been seen. According to Valerie's parents, Patrick Scott and his wife Linda tried to console them at that time, reassuring the two of them that Valerie was probably just off doing what teenagers do, and that wherever she was safe. But the more Jack and Sheena listened to what Patrick Scott and his wife were saying, they found their words to be more suspicious than they were comforting, as they now stood face to face, looking them in the eyes while curiously repeating the term runaway. According to Jack and Sheena, they instantly felt both Patrick Scott and his wife Linda knew more than they were letting on. Eventually, the Scotts left and walked the short distance back to their home that night. However, in the days that followed, they returned several more times, and according to Valerie's mother Sheena, it was Patrick Scott's wife Linda who came to their door more often than not and continued to insist that Valerie must have run away from home.
And she repeated that to me more than once. And she was the main one who came over here trying to console us left and right.
We felt like they were trying to steer us in a certain direction.
And then another thing she kept repeating was how she had to have ran away. I left home at 17 and I said, yeah, Linda, but you got married. There's a difference. I don't know where my child is. And she repeated that to me so many times. I come in the house and I said, Jack, why does she keep repeating that? You know, it didn't make sense.
When police ultimately questioned Patrick Scott for the first time, he provided them with the same story he'd told Valerie's parents, that he hadn't seen her on June 7th and that she didn't work for him that day. In addition, Valerie's green Honda was nowhere to be found, and Patrick Scott told police that he had no knowledge of where her vehicle might be. In the days that followed Valerie's disappearance, a witness came forward with new information to her family. Apparently, someone who lived at the South High Garden condos where Valerie was supposed to be working the day she went missing not only saw her there, but overheard Patrick Scott speaking with Valerie, something about taking her on a trip.
He took her to lunch that day and he said he was taking her somewhere special in Indy to eat. And he also told Valerie that they would come back later that evening to collect the tools and stuff.
According to the witness, Valerie then got into Patrick Scott's vehicle and the two of them drove off. That car was reported as a maroon Ford Taurus, Patrick Scott's personal vehicle. During an interview with a local news outlet, Valerie's mother explained how the witness also saw Patrick Scott return to the South High Garden complex later on that same day, only this time without Valerie Tyndall.
She said, but when he returned, it was just him, and she rode with him when he left.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Rocket Money. Okay, so I'm not an accountant by trade, so one of the last things I want to do at the end of a busy week is to spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer services teams to cancel old subscriptions that I no longer use. That's why I've been using Rocket Money now for over a year. If you don't know what it is, Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I love it because it puts a snapshot of all of my banking activities in one place, and all of that data is easily exportable when it comes tax time. Also, I can see all of my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want or no longer use, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with a few taps, so there's no more waiting on hold indefinitely or engaging in countless emails. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/invisible. That's rocketmoney.com/invisible. rocketmoney.com/invisible. This episode is also proudly sponsored by Honeylove. Hey, honeys, we recently took a family trip to Arizona and my wife brought along two of her most cherished Honeylove crossover bras. Look, she absolutely swears by Honeylove and loves how comfortable these bras specifically are and how cool they are in really hot climates. Now, Honeylove's best-selling crossover bra is so comfortable, it's sure to be your new go-to. This bra gives all the support of traditional bras without using any of the underwires. Plus, the mesh detailing adds a touch of sexy. That I can personally attest. Now, this is one of the bras you'll actually enjoy wearing and won't want to take off. She even sleeps in hers. They're so comfortable. So if you've ever worn an uncomfortable bra and at the end of a long day at work or whatever you're doing, you immediately get home and want to take it off, with Honeylove, you'll never experience that again. Their bras are so comfortable, you'll forget you're even wearing them. Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/choir. Yeah, use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/choir. After your purchase, they ask you where you heard about them. Please, please, please support our show and tell them we sent you. Honeys, you deserve this. Upon receiving this new information, authorities visited Patrick Scott at his home again on June 10th, 2023. Scott initially tried to reiterate that he was never with Valerie that day, but after being told someone had actually seen him with her at the condo building the afternoon she went missing, he decided to switch up his story. In a sudden change of heart, Scott was now claiming that he was in fact with Valerie Tyndall on the day in question, and that midway through the workday, he drove her back to his home, dropped her off there, and then returned to the job site by himself the afternoon of June 7th. He then went on to say that after wrapping up his landscaping for the day, he drove home, only to realize Valerie had already left. Why Patrick Scott would drop Valerie off at his house and not her own just a few hundred yards away from where he lived surely made zero sense to law enforcement. Regardless, Patrick Scott once again suggested that Valerie more than likely ran away, while also throwing in some new allegations that her father Jack was physically abusive. After authorities left Patrick Scott's residence, the state of Indiana released an official Silver Alert bulletin for the missing teenager that very same day.
The Rush County Sheriff's Department is investigating the disappearance of Valerie Tyndall, a 17-year-old white female, 5 feet 6 inches tall, 162 pounds, brown hair with hazel eyes. Last seen wearing a light blue shirt, jean shorts, and sandals, and driving a green 2000 Honda Accord, with Indiana license plate ZYK833. Valerie is missing from Arlington, Indiana, which is 47 miles southeast of Indianapolis, and was last seen on Wednesday, June 7th, 2023, at 12 p.m. She is believed to be in extreme danger. If you have any information on Valerie Tyndall, contact the Rush County Sheriff's Department.
Valerie posted her last photograph of herself to social media the day she went missing. The image showed her wearing brightly colored orange nail polish, and the photo quickly began circulating online, including among members of a Facebook group called Let's Bring Valerie Tyndall Home, Justice for Valerie Tyndall. It was around the same time in the investigation when something very odd occurred. Early one morning at around 2 a.m. in the days immediately following Valerie's disappearance, family members of the Tyndall household noticed a large structure fire in the field directly behind their house, located on Patrick Scott's property.
It was 2 a.m. My kids come down the next morning and my daughter was like, "Mom, you ain't gonna believe this." And I was like, "What?" She goes, "Pat tore down his garage last night." And I was like, "What?"
Members of the Tyndall household, as well as several neighbors, witnessed Patrick Scott's garage mysteriously burn to the ground that morning. And the timing seemed anything but coincidental.
Yeah, I was in bed.
Yeah.
He burnt the garage, tore down, burned it, and had a carport, metal carport, on the garage slab that same night.
There's at least three people that witnessed it.
The fire was called into police. However, Valerie's parents received no further information from law enforcement regarding the cause of the fire. The next official update came from the Rush County Sheriff's Department on June 15th, 2023, 8 days after Valerie's disappearance. Unfortunately, however, it wasn't much of an update at all, as they informed the public that Valerie still hadn't been found. On June 21st, another press release was issued by local law enforcement, this time in reference to Valerie's missing Honda Accord.
"We are asking the public to help find Valerie and her vehicle. We are requesting property owners between Shelbyville, Homer, and Arlington that have deep creek beds, low-level fields, ravines, and properties off a roadway the vehicle could be hidden on or in barns or other buildings. Also, when you are traveling, Be on the lookout for areas where the vehicle could have left the roadway and not be seen easily.
5 long days later, Valerie's green Honda Accord was finally discovered at a different apartment complex than the one she was scheduled to work. The car was found on June 26th, parked at the Berwick Apartments in Shelbyville, Indiana, backed into a space next to several other broken-down vehicles. Valerie's car keys and both license plates were missing. After making the discovery, authorities quickly learned that Patrick Scott conveniently had a landscaping account with Berwick Apartments as well. Valerie's Honda was subsequently seized and stored by police for future evidence testing. After Valerie's car was towed away, police followed up with Patrick Scott at his home for another visit. And when he was told that Valerie's car had been found at another one of his landscaping account properties, Patrick Scott decided to change his story yet again. Apparently suffering from a great deal of memory loss with regard to his whereabouts on June 7th, Scott's new story was that he had met Valerie that afternoon at South High Garden Condominiums in Shelbyville, but instead of giving her a ride to his home in Arlington, he now claimed he drove her to Homer, Indiana, which sits about 13 miles east of the job site. He also said that he had done so in his work truck, which had a large trailer attached. Scott told police that Valerie had left her vehicle behind at the South High Garden Condominiums and explained that he dropped her off in Homer with a male companion who had been driving a smaller blue car. When authorities asked what the make and model of that blue car was, Scott said he wasn't sure, but claimed they were headed toward Rushville, which also happens to be in the same general direction of where both the Scotts and the Tyndalls lived. Scott also provided police with a name, but when police later made contact with this individual, the boy had no clue what police were talking about, and explained that he never saw or picked up Valerie that day. Ultimately, this young man's alibi checked out. Patrick Scott's, on the other hand, not looking quite as airtight. As police began pushing back, they asked Patrick Scott where Valerie said she was going with the man driving the blue car. Scott said that he wasn't sure, only that she told him she was running away with him and that she was never coming back. Scott elaborated by telling police that after he dropped Valerie off, he then drove back to the South High Garden condos and moved Valerie's Honda to the parking space across town at the Berwick apartment complex, where it was ultimately discovered 19 days after Valerie went missing. When asked why he moved Valerie's car, Patrick Scott said that Valerie asked him to, explaining that he was simply, quote, helping her out. By this point, authorities had already obtained Valerie's cell phone records, and during this interaction, they confronted Scott with just some of the evidence they had already collected against him. For instance, Scott's story about dropping Valerie off with the boy in the blue car and Homer appeared to be a meticulously crafted lie, as the route from the job site in Shelbyville would have required him to pass through the city of Homer on the way back to his house. The only issue for Patrick Scott was that Valerie's cell phone last pinged off a tower near his home in Arlington at 12:53 p.m. the afternoon of June 7th, and not in, near, or around Homer or Rushville, as he had claimed. Despite having been presented with this new evidence, Scott doubled down and was now sticking to his latest version of events. Police eventually thanked Patrick Scott for his time and left his home, only to return a few days later with a warrant signed by a judge. And on June 29th, Patrick Scott was arrested and charged with obstructing justice by providing false information to law enforcement during an active investigation of a missing person. Unfortunately, the charge was only a Class A misdemeanor, and Patrick Scott ultimately bonded out of jail and was later released. By now, 17-year-old Valerie Tyndall had been missing for nearly 3 months, and it had been over 2 since investigators recovered her green 2000 Honda Accord. However, to her parents' frustration, Jack and Sheena weren't even told the car had been recovered until late August of 2023.
It's always the same thing.
We really don't have anything new. We're going through data, constantly telling me they're going through data. Recently learned that the police have had a vehicle since June 26th, and they have been storing it and had not notified us until today.
While law enforcement wasn't sharing much information at all, even with the missing teen's family, Valerie's father Jack and mother Sheena continued to keep their daughter in the public eye by speaking with the media every chance they had.
If you know anything about anybody she could be talking to, where she could have went, what she might be in, anything, to let police know so they can investigate it. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. If you think of something, come forward.
That August, Jack Tyndall went on to tell correspondent Cassie Garrett with the 765 Local News about the last time he saw his daughter before she left for work, on the morning of June 7th, 2023.
I was working in the bathroom, and I come down for a break, and she was in her room and going down to try to wash some clothes and come back, and she come down and said she was going to go to work for a couple of hours, that she'd be back. She smiled at me right in the eye when she said it, and I haven't seen her since.
This was around the same time when a handful of individuals began openly criticizing Valerie's parents online, some of whom even accused Jack and Sheena of having something to do with their daughter's disappearance. During the 765 interview, Valerie's baby sister also spoke with the media, before inevitably breaking down in tears.
We're best friends. Oh God, I can't do this.
At this stage in the investigation, Jack and Sheena had seemingly lost all hope in law enforcement. When they did hear from the authorities who were working the case, more often than not, the only thing they were told was to refrain from speaking with the media.
I mean, I tried to stay positive with them.
Yeah, we tried. But, you know, when you never hear from them, the only time you do hear from them is when you call them. They don't tell you anything, you know.
All they kept saying was, keep it out of the media, keep it out of the media.
Yeah, the whole time it's been keeping out of the media.
According to Jack and Sheena, they were left in the dark almost entirely with regard to updates from police. And having received no new information aside from the discovery of Valerie's car and that authorities were sifting through some kind of data, Jack and Sheena began to consider they might never see their daughter again. While it's upsetting to hear there had been little to no communication from law enforcement, authorities were in fact building a case behind the scenes against their number one suspect, and that was 59-year-old Patrick Scott. And the data that investigators vaguely mentioned to Valerie's family early on was in reference to an overwhelming amount of digital forensic evidence. You see, unbeknownst to the family, the Rush County Sheriff's Department reached out to the FBI in August of 2023, which ultimately produced the execution of some 50 total search warrants in the case. And according to retrieved cell phone records, Valerie Tyndall's last text message was sent to her boss, Patrick Scott, at 11:23 a.m. the morning of her disappearance, a message which read,
"I'll be there soon."
This episode is proudly sponsored by Squarespace. All right, if you're a regular listener of Invisible Choir, you probably already know that I've been using Squarespace for years to create and manage our beautiful website at invisiblechoir.com. Squarespace is the all-in-one website design platform that makes it possible for any entrepreneur or anyone with a personal brand to stand out online. I love it because the websites are so simple to build and they're beautiful. One of the reasons it's so easy is that Squarespace has all sorts of different product features built right in seamlessly. Now, I've been using their flexible website templates since the beginning. These are professionally crafted website templates designed for nearly every category, and they are easily tailored and customizable to your brand. Squarespace also has an integrated analytics function, which allows you to view insights related to your business, so you can learn where your site visits are and how to maximize sales or visits in a particular area. But one of the features we use probably the most over at InvisibleChoir.com is the Squarespace blogging tool. It makes it so easy to share stories, photos, videos, and updates. You can even schedule them all in advance. Now, we run every podcast episode through that blog, so after we've scheduled one to publish, it populates automatically onto our main page, so it actually makes things simpler. If you're ready to take your brand or business venture to the next level, head on over to squarespace.com/choir for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use code CHOIR at checkout to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/choir and use code CHOIR at checkout. Investigators were able to track Valerie's GPS coordinates, which showed her phone arriving at work in Shelbyville a short time later. However, almost as soon as she arrived, her device then showed her traveling back to her and Patrick Scott's neighborhood in Arlington, Indiana. Investigators also pulled data from a family tracking app called Life 360, which Patrick Scott and Valerie Tindall both had installed on their phones. Ironically, Life 360 is an application meant to keep children safe. In its intended use, the app sends notifications to either a parent or guardian's phone, say if their child arrives at school, for example. Valerie's mother, Sheena, spoke to the media openly during one interview about the Life 360 app, after learning that Patrick Scott allegedly downloaded it onto Valerie's device months before her disappearance.
She come home one day and she says where he tracks their phones because they all had the iPhone. And I said, why does he have you on that? Like that, you're not his family. Why is he tracking you? And she said, I don't know. I don't see nothing wrong with it. I was like, really? You don't see nothing wrong with that? I thought that was really peculiar.
Investigators essentially learned that Patrick Scott and Valerie Tindall had a unique relationship outside of work. You see, leading up to her disappearance, Valerie's mother told investigators that Patrick Scott's behavior toward her daughter was more reminiscent of a jealous boyfriend, as opposed to that of a boss or a family friend. Authorities also learned that Patrick Scott was known to regularly provide Valerie with money aside from her landscaping paycheck. Scott would also give Valerie gifts and even took her on trips, including a visit to the Newport Aquarium on at least one occasion located in Newport, Kentucky. Authorities located a photo the two had taken together from that day, where they posed in front of an aquatic backdrop featuring fish, stingrays, sea turtles, and more. While learning more about the atypical relationship between Valerie and the prime suspect, authorities were eventually able to officially corroborate the witness account from the individual who said they saw Valerie get into Scott's vehicle on June 7th, if you recall that maroon Ford Taurus. Thanks to CCTV, Patrick Scott's maroon Ford was captured on video by a license plate reader shortly after leaving the South High Garden condos the afternoon Valerie went missing. The car was spotted heading southbound toward his and Valerie's neighborhood in Arlington, Indiana. In piecing together their timeline, investigators learned that at around 1:35 p.m. on June 7th, the Apple Health app on Patrick Scott's iPhone indicated a drastic change in activity, his phone having recorded an abnormal amount of physical movement at that time. And later on the evening of June 7th, cell phone records indicated that Patrick Scott texted Valerie at about 5:40 p.m., asking where she was. The following day, on June 8th, 2023, Patrick Scott again texted Valerie's phone, asking her whereabouts at 2:46 p.m. In the days that followed, investigators noticed that there had been a noticeable change in Patrick Scott's overall online activity. He suddenly stopped searching on the internet almost entirely and began deactivating several applications on his cell phone. Roughly 4 months had passed, and still there was no sign of 17-year-old Valerie Tindall. On October 11th, 2023, her parents, Jack and Sheena, were taken by surprise when they noticed a vast presence of law enforcement descending onto Patrick Scott's property. Valerie's mother, Sheena, remembers that day, recalling a blue crime scene tent that was erected, as well as the cadaver dogs that began circling a large plot of land behind their house.
I had a whole panic attack. I could not breathe. And I'm like freaking out. And I said, Jack, they don't do that for no reason. Yeah, and he said, calm down, babe, calm down.
That day, Patrick Scott willingly consented to a search of his land. However, the four cadaver dogs eventually all made their way to a single location, a small pond on the suspect's property. Ultimately, all of the dogs on scene hit on the scent of active human decomposition. Dive teams were also called in, but despite the use of the state-of-the-art sonar technology and hours of searching, no evidence of human remains were ever found. And after no physical evidence of foul play was located within Patrick Scott's pond, a topography study was conducted following that initial search. The land was surveyed more closely, including the angle at which it sloped, ultimately leading investigators to realize that the odor of decomposition the dogs had hit on earlier may have in fact come from a pond water runoff, originating somewhere else on the property. It was also suggested that the scent may have traveled by a draft of wind from a nearby location. So, in the pursuit of these two theories, law enforcement conducted an aerial flyover of the vast acreage of Patrick Scott's adjoining properties. Ultimately, this allowed law enforcement to see firsthand if there was any land that had been visibly disturbed or appeared unnatural. Land, for instance, that may have been dug up. The flyover resulted in several sightings of those type of land disturbances. Several days later, on November 28, 2023, nearly 6 months after Valerie's initial disappearance, Valerie's mother Sheena answered a knock at the door. It was a detective with the Rush County Sheriff's Office, who just stopped by to inform her and her husband that Patrick Scott's property was going to be raided again that very day.
The detective ended up knocking on my door that morning and explained it to me face to face what was going to happen. And he made it very clear that all the roads would be blocked off and that there would be several cop cars everywhere and that they would be doing a very thorough search.
Hours later, authorities arrived with warrants for three of Patrick Scott's properties, one granting a search behind his primary residence in Arlington, one for a second plot of land just a few hundred yards away, and a third warrant for a property he owned in nearby Johnson County, roughly 40 miles west of Arlington. Local authorities, the FBI, the U.S. Marshals, and cadaver dogs began searching all three locations of interest. However, this time, the canine units failed to pick up a scent. Investigators then turned their focus toward two specific locations on the land in Arlington, both of which had shown significant land disturbance during that initial flyover, not far from Patrick Scott's pond. Upon arriving, it didn't take law enforcement long to notice a large mound of rocks, dirt, and concrete spotted on Scott's second property, just down the road from his primary residence. Soon, over 40 personnel began surrounding this new location of interest. Meanwhile, Patrick Scott was under close surveillance at a residence in Shelby County, several miles away from where the main search was underway. Back on his land in Arlington, news trucks and local journalists had already assembled their cameras along the perimeter of the property, where they began broadcasting live on location.
Those are federal agents you see working down at the end of this street in Arlington. They're looking for a missing young woman, and the clues to her disappearance could reside on a neighbor's property.
It was later determined that the small hill made up of broken concrete slab and other debris were the remnants of Patrick Scott's old garage, the same one that had mysteriously burned down in the early morning hours roughly 6 months before. After meticulously excavating through the rubble, investigators eventually recovered a large rectangular box buried beneath. The box was over 5 feet long and had been wrapped in a large tarp and appeared to be homemade out of wood. After opening the box, authorities located several pages of miscellaneous paperwork, as well as several old VHS cassette tapes. After continuing on digging deeper into the earth, authorities soon came upon a second box. Though it was similar in size, the second box was different, in that a foul odor was emitting from inside. The second box had also been wrapped in additional layers of tarp-like material, even more than the first. And after removing several layers of plastic, the odor of decomposition intensified. Authorities noticed that the piece of wood serving as the lid to the second box had been screwed shut and the seams reinforced with duct tape. Upon prying the box open, another object was found inside, this one shaped like a body that had been wrapped in even more plastic. After peeling back the layers, at approximately 4:45 p.m., one officer noted what appeared to be human remains in a stage of advanced decomposition. One of the first things he noticed was a hand with fingernails that had been painted bright orange. Moments later, several miles away from the crime scene, Patrick Scott was taken into custody for suspicion of murder. He and his wife Linda were then both transported to the Rush County Sheriff's Office for further questioning.
Investigators believe they found the remains of 17-year-old Valerie Tyndall on her neighbor's property in Rush County, just northwest of Rushville.
The evening human remains were discovered on Patrick Scott's property, Valerie's mother Sheena was still at work. Her husband Jack called her as soon as he learned that a body had been found roughly 100 yards away from their house.
I was at work. I got it at about 6 o'clock at night. They found her at 4, around 4 o'clock, I believe.
I had to call her, get her to get out of work, come home.
The following day, on November 29th, 2023, the Rush County Sheriff's Department, alongside the FBI and the U.S. Marshals Service, held a live press conference announcing Patrick Scott's arrest.
Yesterday, my department, along with partners from the Rushville Police Department, FBI, U.S. Marshals Service, and others, conducted a significant investigation in the search of missing teen Valerie Tyndall, who was reported missing June 8th in Arlington. We have been working tirelessly on this case since its inception, executing more than 50 search warrants and expanding countless man hours in the effort of locating Valerie. Regretfully, during our search yesterday, we discovered human remains buried on a property in Arlington. This property belonged to Patrick Scott, who was identified earlier in the case as a person of interest. The remains have yet to be positively identified by the coroner, who will establish a cause and manner of death. Following the discovery of the body, Patrick Scott was arrested for murder and booked into the Rush County Jail. This is not the outcome we had all hoped for, but I want to stress to the public that this case is far from over. There is still much work to be done, and our focus will now shift to successful prosecution of anyone who may be involved.
Aside from informing the public that they've now had a suspect in custody and that a body had been discovered, authorities remained relatively tight-lipped about their investigation, just as they had since the very beginning.
What type of evidence are you able to tell us that was recovered at the site yesterday?
Human remains.
And what else?
That's all I'm going to comment on.
The body had not yet been officially identified, but Valerie's parents already knew who was found inside of that makeshift box. Following the press conference, Jack and Sheena briefly addressed the media themselves.
My daughter didn't deserve this. We just want answers right now. We just want answers as to why. Because her and him had a bond, like they were friends. And
so we thought.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, down at the Rush County Jail, Patrick Scott had already been interviewed by law enforcement. His wife, Linda, was ultimately let go, but not long after being confronted with the overwhelming evidence against him, her husband, Patrick Scott, confessed to the murder of his 17-year-old neighbor and employee, Valerie Tyndall.
She tried to seduce me, and I wasn't going to have it.
But what happened to Valerie? That's where you're stopping.
What, I mean?
What'd you do to her?
What'd I do to her?
What'd you do to her? Tell us what you did to her.
Strangled her.
With what?
A belt.
While sitting across from a detective inside of a small interrogation room, Patrick Scott finally admitted that on the afternoon of June 7th, shortly after Valerie arrived at work, he drove her back to his residence, explaining that the two arrived back in Arlington, Indiana, just before 1 p.m. He went on to say that they eventually found themselves in his bedroom, at which point he claimed Valerie began taking off her clothes. Scott said that it was at this point the teenager then came on to him sexually and that she, quote, got carried away. Scott went on to tell the detective that Valerie was attempting to blackmail him into purchasing her a new vehicle. When he was asked to explain what he meant by this, Patrick Scott said that he tried to reason with Valerie, and told her if her car ever broke down and her father Jack was unable to fix it, he would purchase her another one, but it would be a used car. Scott then claimed that his compromise wasn't good enough for Valerie, explaining that she wanted a brand new car. Additionally, Scott said he thought Valerie would try to expose him for trying to sexually assault her, which he claimed never even happened. Scott then went on to say that he, quote, wasn't going to have it. When asked what verbal threats Valerie made to him specifically with regard to blackmail, Scott said there were none, followed by,
I just knew she was going to blackmail me.
Patrick Scott then went on to say, quote, things got out of hand, explaining that a shoving match ensued there in the bedroom. He then said at some point during the altercation, he produced a belt and began strangling the 17-year-old until she stopped moving. When authorities asked him if Valerie put up a fight, Patrick Scott said, quote,
well, a little bit.
When the detective asked Scott whose belt it was that was used in the killing, he admitted that it was his own. When asked where the belt was at, Scott claimed that he didn't know. However, it was later determined that he continued to wear that very belt for some time after the murder. Scott reiterated several times that he did not have sex with Valerie on June 7th and that he hadn't been in any type of romantic or sexual relationship with her prior. And after strangling the teen to death, Patrick Scott confessed that he dragged Valerie's lifeless body from his bedroom to a smaller room in his home that served as an office.
Okay. Then what'd you do with it?
I moved her into the office.
Okay. How long was she in there?
Till the next day.
Scott said that he locked the door, that he was the only one who had access to the office, and claimed that his wife and daughter were unaware that a murder had taken place. When asked about the box Valerie was buried in, Scott explained that he made it from old lumber that he had laying around in the yard. However, investigators already knew that this was not the case, as the day after the murder on June 8th, 2023, Patrick Scott traveled roughly 20 miles north to a Home Depot in Greenfield, Indiana, where he purchased 4 2x4s and 2 sheets of 4-foot by 8-foot oriented strand board, otherwise known as OSB, which is similar to plywood, only less expensive. When confronted with the evidence placing him at the Home Depot on June 8th, the detective again asked if he was there, at which point Scott said,
maybe I did. I could have.
Elaborating in his confession even further, Scott then admitted that he proceeded to build the homemade casket in his backyard the day after murdering Valerie. He said that when he was done, he entered the office where he wrapped Valerie's body in plastic before heading back outside to retrieve the box. Scott said he placed Valerie's remains inside the makeshift coffin, screwed and sealed the lid shut, and then wheeled it to his adjacent property, just houses down from his primary residence, using a 2-wheeled dolly. Scott then placed the box in a pre-dug hole, buried Valerie's remains, and then covered the box with dirt, rocks, and the broken chunks of concrete using a shovel. Once he was finished, Scott went to work and proceeded to cut the grass at a local cemetery of all places. Scott told the authorities that the hole in which he buried Valerie's body had actually been dug sometime before the murder, for the purpose of filling it with concrete and not for the purpose of eventually burying a body. When he was asked what that first box was for, the one with the old VHS cassette tapes and paperwork inside, Scott said the following.
To put shit in.
He then went on to say that he buried the box containing the papers and VHS cassette tapes on top of Valerie's remains, roughly 1 month after the murder, in July of 2023. The detective eventually asked if his wife Linda was involved in any way, specifically asking if she had helped him move Valerie's car after the murder, to which he responded no. Instead, Scott told the detective that he was the one who moved it, as heard from one of his earlier recollection of events made to police. When he was asked why he moved the victim's Honda from one apartment complex to the other after the murder, Scott said because his daughter had seen it. When asked what he did with Valerie's car keys and license plate, he replied, quote,
they're gone. I threw them in a river.
Patrick Scott was never able to recall which river or precisely where the items had been discarded. When asked if he hated or resented Valerie Tyndall in any way, Patrick Scott said no, instead claiming that the two, quote,
did all kinds of stuff together, like going out to eat and taking her shopping.
When asked if he had ever planned to kill Valerie, Scott said,
no, that just kind of happened.
Additionally, when asked if killing Valerie bothered him at all, Scott replied,
well, I wasn't too crazy about it.
At the conclusion of his full confession, 59-year-old Patrick Scott was arrested and formally charged with 3 counts, including obstructing justice, providing false information to law enforcement, and a felony murder. Two days after Patrick Scott's arrest, the coroner positively identified the victim as 17-year-old Valerie Tyndall. Patrick Scott was subsequently denied bond. The following day, Valerie's parents spoke with the media once again.
Makes me sick. And he didn't just murder her, he left her sit in that house.
Jack and Sheena then went on to address the callous nature of Patrick Scott's confession.
The way he described everything so artlessly, there was no, it was like it was not even a human being speaking.
She's worked for him for 2 years and there's no remorse at all.
But Jack and Sheena also had a message for their daughter's killer that day. A message they hoped he would hear from behind bars.
I went from being sad to now I'm just angry. I'm so angry. And I won't stop until there are answers.
He's a freaking monster.
You're heartless, soulless. You're a demon. And God will make you pay.
Valerie Tyndall's funeral was held at the Arlington Christian Church, followed by a celebration of life service in Arlington, Indiana, on December 9th, 2023. After exhaustively researching this case, it still felt like there was an important piece of the story missing. And that's just who Valerie Tyndall was before meeting Patrick Scott. As it often does in tragic cases like this, the focus tends to shift toward the offender, whether it be intentional or not. For us, perhaps even selfishly so we can sleep at night, it's crucial we remain cognizant of how important it is to place the victims and their families first, and who better to learn about Valerie's character from than the people who loved her the most, her mother Sheena and her father Jack.
Valerie's very ambitious, wanted to be a veterinarian.
You're very smart, made friends easily.
Valerie's mother told us so much about her daughter that we wouldn't have otherwise known without speaking to the family. Like how Valerie loved her dog Lacey, the Boston Terrier, that she came from a big family of 1 brother and 5 sisters, and that they'd lived in Indianapolis before moving to Rush County. Unfortunately, Valerie's family resided in a rough part of the city before moving to Arlington. Sheena wanted to get her kids out of the city into a safer environment, away from the violence and crime. Sadly, that wasn't the only motivation to leave Indianapolis. Sheena told us that when Valerie and her sisters were very young, they were sexually abused by an older family member, a man who Valerie considered to be her grandfather.
My oldest daughter called me in the kitchen, and Valerie was standing there with a nightie. Had 2 layers. One was silk underneath, and then it had a lacy purple veil over it. And she took it and draped it over her head as to try to hide her face from me. And my oldest one said, Valerie's got something she wants to tell you, Mom. And I said, okay, what is it, Val? And she just started doing this number, like telling me no. And I said, come on, you can tell Mom anything. Tell me what is it? What's going on? And she just kept telling me no. And so I just assumed I wasn't going to get nothing out of her, apparently. And I went to go kind of turn, and my oldest one yelled out that molested her mom, or yeah, it was molested her mom.
According to Valerie's mother, Valerie's step-grandfather had been sexually abusing her children for years before her oldest daughter eventually came forward. The man was in his 60s.
And I turned back around, I looked at her, I said, what? And she repeated it. And I thought, are you serious? Really? And she said, yes. And then Valerie's still standing there with her face covered. And I said, is that why you're hiding your face? And she kind of nodded. And I said, you have nothing to be ashamed of. You didn't do anything wrong. I said, you're a child, Valerie. You're a baby. I mean, my daughter was like, I want to say she was 6 or 7, 8. I found out that it had happened 2 years prior to me finding out that someone else in the family had found out before us, but didn't bother saying anything and allow my children to continue going around here. And not only did they do that, but this person Valerie considered to be her best friend. And it damaged her so bad. I mean, it was bad enough that this man who's supposed to be your grandfather does something like this to you. But then her grandma and other people should have stepped up and helped and said something, but they didn't.
Sheena explained that Valerie was never the same after that, and that the trauma she suffered as a child undoubtedly changed the framework for how she viewed the world. That was when Sheena and Jack got the kids out of Indianapolis. They did what they could to provide a new beginning for their family. However, they had no way of knowing that relocating roughly 45 miles east to the city of Arlington would inadvertently place their family closer to an even greater danger than they'd known before, when Patrick Allen Scott became their neighbor by chance, and eventually Valerie's killer. Leading up to her disappearance, Valerie faced even more adversity. After arriving at her new school of Rushville High, she was bullied by her peers. Her mother didn't learn until after she was killed that when she was in Indianapolis, Valerie had stuck up for a group of students who were being bullied back at her old school. They reached out to Sheena after Valerie's death to let her know how much she'd helped them during that time.
I learned after all this that she has truly been an inspiration to people over the years, and I didn't realize that she reached out to people who were bullied, so I was proud to hear that.
Valerie was a kind-hearted teenager who had been through so much more than most people realize. Despite the hand she was dealt, she was always willing to lend a helping hand to others. Sheena told us that in 2016, their family home nearly burnt to the ground, explaining that the first one eager to hang a piece of sheetrock in the rebuilding process was her daughter, Valerie. In January of 2024, Patrick Allen Scott reached a plea deal with the state of Indiana.
The man arrested for the death of a 17-year-old Valerie Tindall has agreed to plead guilty in her murder. Tindall was first reported missing last June. Now, 59-year-old Patrick Scott will plead guilty to one count of murder, which includes a 57-year prison sentence. He also agrees to pay the Tindall family $10,000 in restitution. The deal, though, still needs to be finalized.
Months later, Patrick Allen Scott officially pled guilty to the murder of 17-year-old Valerie Tindall. He was then sentenced to 57 years in prison on March 11, 2024. Valerie's mother, Sheena, was present that day in the courtroom, and Scott never once made eye contact with the victim's family throughout the entire hearing. Later on that evening, the Rush County Sheriff's Department published a final press release informing the public of the finality of the case, while addressing some of the rumors and misinformation that had previously been spread throughout the investigation.
On March 11, 2024, Patrick Scott pleaded guilty to murdering Valerie Tindall in Rush Circuit Court as part of a plea agreement. Scott was sentenced to 57 years to be served in the Indiana Department of Corrections. Our agency is fully aware of the effects this tragedy has had on our community and wants the public to understand that we took this case very seriously from the start, which led to this arrest and conviction. There are several narratives that have been inaccurately reported during this investigation. When you combine the inaccuracies in timeline of events, location of events, and detail of events, they give the false perception of missed red flags, which is not accurate. The accurate timeline and true narrative provided the foundation, which led to this case being solved and ultimately to a conviction.
Valerie's parents told us that they still have many questions surrounding not only Valerie's death, But what happened in the 6 months leading up to her discovery? One aspect that Jack and Sheena aren't prepared to put in their rearview just yet is the theory that they've held on to since the very beginning, which is their belief that Patrick Scott's wife, Linda, was in some way involved in the crime.
Linda, there's no way she didn't know. And they're trying to tell us that Patrick done this all by himself. There's no way.
Sheena's suspicion of Scott's wife early on didn't solely stem from behaviors following Valerie's disappearance. According to Valerie's parents, those feelings originated from an incident that occurred months before, when Patrick Scott's wife allegedly chased Valerie down in her car.
My daughter's best friend's mom calls and she's saying, Sheena, did you hear what happened? She not only followed my daughter around Shelbyville, but she also followed her around Rushville. And come to find out that the daughter of Linda and Patrick Scott was driving the vehicle. It was her new vehicle that she was driving. And her mom was in the passenger seat telling her to follow Valerie.
When Valerie returned home that day, Sheena asked what would have provoked Patrick Scott's wife to chase down a teenage girl reaching speeds at over 80 miles per hour.
Is there something going on between you and Pat? Like, why is she doing this? And she said, I don't know, Mom, but no, there's nothing going on between us. That's disgusting. And she swore up down Linda was crazy. And I said, Valerie, that's not very nice. And she said, Mom, you don't understand. She is crazy.
One thing that did take us by surprise, however, was when Valerie's mother, Sheena, told us that she's since forgiven Patrick Scott.
You know, I did mean to tell Patrick Scott in court that as hard as this is for me to say, I do forgive him. I don't mean that like I forgive you, you can come out of jail and all that good stuff, but I do forgive him as a human being. And I do still believe in my heart that he's covering up for somebody. Time will tell, I guess.
Now, it's crucial we establish that no one other than Patrick Allen Scott has been considered a suspect in this case, nor has anyone else been charged with a crime. Patrick Scott is the sole perpetrator who has been adjudicated through the courts, and the only one to have been found guilty for murdering Valerie Tyndall. With that said, we also deem it necessary that the voice and opinions of Valerie's family are heard, a family who is respectfully still very much actively grieving. The loss of an innocent 17-year-old's life and the manner in which Valerie Tyndall was killed couldn't possibly be more tragic, at least one would think. However, the unfortunate truth is that there's a possibility two lives were lost on June 7th, 2023, at least according to her mother, Sheena. She learned Valerie may have been pregnant at the time of her murder, after putting some of her clothes away in her daughter's dresser drawer.
I just happened to open a drawer and go to put something up, and I noticed the pregnancy test box. So, of course, I pull it out, and she's sitting right there. I turn around, and I look at her, and I said, are you pregnant? And she said, no. And I said, why do you have this? And she said, I thought I might be. And I said, well, if you were, who would be the dad? And, of course, she named a gentleman that she's been talking to for a while.
A few months later, roughly 1 week before Valerie was killed, Sheena recalled seeing her daughter's side profile and noticed what she thought could be early signs of a pregnancy.
Almost 3 months down the road, right before she disappeared. I mean, like, she had disappeared a week within this time frame, I want to say, of me sitting in our trailer with her and my oldest daughter. And I just happened to be sitting directly across from her, and she was turned sideways. And I was sitting there thinking, dang, that looks like a three-month pooch. So I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at her, and I'm like, Valerie, are you pregnant? And she said, no. I sat there for a minute and I was like, are you sure? And she goes, well, what if I was, or something like that. And I said, well, I kicked your ass. And I was just joking with her. You know, I started laughing. And she goes, well, I'm pregnant. And I said, no, I'd wait until you had the baby. And then I kicked your ass. And I just started laughing again. And that was the end of it. Like, she never said nothing else.
Though the autopsy has never been made public, Sheena says she's still not sure if Valerie was indeed pregnant at the time she was murdered. Internet sleuths and armchair detectives have since speculated that Patrick Scott might have been the father to Valerie's unborn child, and that her murder may have been motivated by an unwanted or accidental pregnancy. It's important to note that this theory is just that, hearsay, and does not in any way represent material fact, and has never been substantiated by law enforcement. Also, Valerie's mother and father have undoubtedly been subjected to intense scrutiny since the day their daughter disappeared. Despite having lost her in such a horrific way, Jack and Sheena continue to be scrutinized in the wake of this tragedy, predominantly from people online who have never met them. One thing they asked us to mention is that Valerie wasn't just close with Patrick Scott. They were as well. Valerie was also friends with Patrick Scott's granddaughter, who was around the same age. In fact, Jack, Sheena, Patrick Scott, his wife Linda, Valerie, and all of the children even took family trips together in the past. In the end, there's no denying that Valerie's relationship with Patrick Scott was both questionable and concerning. However, for whatever reason, he was someone the family trusted. As outsiders looking in, it's human nature to want answers. It's also extremely easy to pass judgment or place blame when something horrible occurs. Perhaps this is done as a mechanism to attempt to reach some kind of higher understanding as to why monsters like Patrick Scott commit the heinous acts they do. We may never know. The point being, this case is tragic in more ways than one, with several factors at play, including the abusive environment and economic circumstances the family was inevitably plagued with since the children were very young. At the close of our interview, Sheena had a final message she wanted to send out to the public, and that was to show more kindness overall.
I did want to put this out there for people. For anybody who thought that we might have harmed our child, yes, that was very hurtful. I was kind of shocked at the, I don't want to be mean or anything when I say this, so the lack of thought behind it. Your words do hurt people. And, you know, we're here beside ourselves trying to figure out where our daughter is, broken. And on top of that, we have people out here just bashing us. And it's like, wow, we don't deserve that, you know? And I'm sure, you know, they're looking back at it now and possibly feeling bad about it, but it's done. Just think before you speak and be kinder.
Sheena and Jack Tyndall say that they're still seeking answers, but above all, they want their daughter Valerie to be remembered for the hardworking and caring person that she was. A life tragically cut short by a man who more than likely groomed the 17-year-old. And gained her trust until it all went horribly wrong.